This one guy, Eric Hartman, claimed that he shot down 352 airplanes. There were 60 aces in the Germans shot down between 100 and 150 aircraft each. Those 60 men accounted for another 7,095 machines. The Germans, a lot of those guys, the aces like that, the ones they shot down were in the Spanish War in Spain before World War II. And they were aces before that.
Something that Mary does, she spends a lot of her time knitting,
Oh, yeah.
and she knits about one hat a day.
Oh, I expect, I know she gives away about 250 hats a year. So that's getting close to one hat every day.
And so she makes it, and these go to the
They
schools,
go to the little kids.
the newborns.
Yeah.
And how long has she been doing that?
Oh, she did that when we were going together in high school, go on Saturday afternoons to the movie. The more exciting the film got, the more clicks go on the needles. Click, 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 click.
So she's been knitting her whole life.
All her whole life, and
Okay.
she really knows how to do it.
Well, and that's a great thing that she's doing. She's knitting. I saw her knitting area there, and it's quite extensive. She's
Yes, it
got
is.
quite a little production there. Are there any other stories about the war?
The buzz bombs, V-2 rockets, were two different types of things. The buzz bomb was a ramjet with little wings on it. It was like a little airplane, and the buzz part of it will zoop, 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 and then when it quit, of course, the bomb would fall out of the sky, and you'd hear this terrific explosion. Well, they sent over several thousand of those into London. That killed a bunch of the English. I was on at least three bombing raids to the place where they would send them off. We'd bomb the place, and then they'd move them someplace else, and so it was a vicious circle. You just kept bombing one place, and they'd keep moving to another. Then whatever his name was, developed the V-2 rocket, and that was the beginning of our space program. Von Braun, yeah. And we bombed that one. But those were rockets just like they have now. They would set those things up and shoot them up, and they would go up into the stratosphere and then straight down into London. And one afternoon we were on stand down, and nobody flew from our field, and we could go into London. And so I took my crew, and we got a hotel room that had everything, and we were so pleased. It was great. At about 2 o'clock in the morning, the siren went off, and I asked the guys, "Do you want to go down to the basement?" "No, we don't need to do that." I said, "Okay." So we turned over in bed, and about that time, wham! One hit just about a block away. It was one of the V-2 rockets. Huge explosion. Terrible. It blew us right out of bed. Oh my! Then I said, "Do you want to go to the basement?" "Well, might be a good idea." And so they took me down to the basement. I wasn't going to go, but I went with them. And of course, nothing else happened. You already know about the nose going off. I didn't say anything about the people in the plane. What happened to them? See, we've already talked about the nose being knocked off and the formation. We went through 144 fragmentation bombs, and the racks and the holes in the plane. The tail gunner was adjusting his helmet. We all wore these steel helmets because of flak. Flak was my enemy. At the time I was flying, the fighters were about done because they didn't have the fuel and they didn't have pilots. We'd killed them all. Don Howard, the tail gunner, pulling his helmet down. He looked head bent down almost to his knees for some reason or other. The tail gunner stood on his knees back there almost the whole time. He had his head down, and when he looked back up, there was a big hole on both sides of where his head had been. And it just like that, wham. So he talks about that. He says that wakes him up at night. The bombs, when they went out, of course, the bomb bay doors were open. they were open when the nose of the plane was knocked off, and I was going about 150 miles an hour, and that blast going through that hole went right under my feet and right straight down through the bomb bay doors open. And it was such a blast that the little motors couldn't pull the bomb bay doors back to shut. So they were open all the time. And after I sent Cuffy and Jim Derby back, he was the navigator, sent them back behind the radio room door, and the co-pilot did too. He went back there, and I sat up there and just I pulled out away from the group so that if the fighters were out, we could get back in if we had to. Also, I pulled away to keep from, if we blew up, I didn't want to take anybody else with us. I just pulled out to the side a little way. But of course, at that altitude, my oxygen mask would freeze up. It would get about every 10 minutes, it'd get just almost completely solid, and I couldn't breathe. And I was stuck to the wheel. This left hand was on the control stick and the other was on the throttles, and they were frozen on there. And that blast of 150 mile an hour, and it was 60 below zero. And I mean, that's cold, boy. And I hate cold weather with a vengeance now. Anyway, Cuffy would come up about every 10 minutes. He'd, without a parachute on now, he'd crawl across this beam that's right there at the bottom of the airplane, up through the door behind the upper turret gunner, come around and beat on my oxygen mask and break it all up, shake it off, and put it back on me. He couldn't pull my hands off. Then he'd turn around and crawl back across that damn thing again. I don't know how he did that, looking down through that thing at 28,000 feet. I mean, that's something else, boy. No parachute. Anyway, after this all happened, I tried to get the colonel to give him the Distinguished Flying Cross. He really deserved it because of doing that and throwing the live bombs out of the nose. But the colonel says, oh, well, he'd have had to do that anyway. And then the radio operator on another mission, not where the nose went off, he always tapped code leaning over his radio. It was a little square box. He'd lean with one arm over it, tap the code with the other hand. That's the way he did it normally. Well, this morning, he was too tired or something, and he was laying back. He said he was just laying back in his chair and tapping the code. And the 88 millimeter shell went right up through the radio, right on up through the top of the plane, and blew up about 2,000 feet up where his head had been. That was a good one. That was Al Boyd. And I had an experience that not very many guys ever had. I had a runaway propeller.